The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit is made possible in part by Samaritas, the state's largest private foster care and adoption agency. However, Samaritas also provides a number of other services around the state. They are one of the largest refugee resettlement agencies in Michigan. They serve homeless families, persons with disabilities, abused and trafficked women. They also provide market rate and affordable housing for seniors and HUD housing for families, and also have skilled nursing, memory care, and rehab communities in Grand Rapids, Cadillac, and Saginaw. Samaritas, we thank them for their support here at Deadline Detroit. This is the Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit. Thank you very much for being with me on this Wednesday, sort of a halftime between the two debates. Of course, the first of two Democratic debates featuring 10 candidates each took place last night at the Fox Theater in Detroit. And of course, two of my coworkers were there watching in person. We have Alan Lengle, of course, and Nancy Derringer from Deadline Detroit. Thank you both for being here today.
Hey, great to be here.
A little earlier than we normally do this. See, this is normally like a Friday type of thing, but here we are today. Alan, I'm going to start with you here for just a second because 10 candidates on the stage makes for a difficult debate. You don't get a lot of back and forth between people, and certainly the way that the rules were set up last night, there was not a lot of opportunity for any real back and forth on specific issues. So, I mean, if you were, put yourself as an independent voter here, somebody that was trying to learn something about these candidates, did we learn anything about these candidates?
I think we did. I mean, the biggest thing, you know, and CNN was trying to pit the, you know, the progressive or the liberals against the moderates on this. And it really comes down to really health care is really the main issue between the two on that. And I think people have to educate themselves. I fear that people are not going to educate themselves and people's, I mean, still to this day, I mean, some of the, you know, like Trump is saying, let's get rid of Obamacare, which is far from perfect. But I think it's the foundation for what for which to improve upon. And I think a lot of people are like, oh, no, we don't want to, you know,
no.
We love paying these huge, you know, copays.
No, what
we
he wants
love-
to do is he wants to take away all the things that people don't like, i.e. paying for it, and keep all the things people really do like about it, like keeping your kids on your insurance till they're 25, you know, the pre-existing conditions, all that stuff. So, I mean, He wants the child's the Fisher Price version of Obamacare, where you get everything you want, but it doesn't cost you anything. So there you go.
Well, healthcare did seem to be the big issue there. All right, before we get into that, though, I do want to talk about the format for the debate, because I wasn't sure when you guys were there, you were actually in the media area for anybody that wasn't with CNN. So the Washington Post and the Times and Deadline Detroit and all those folks were over in the building next door watching on TV.
Right.
We were at the Hockey Town Cafe.
Bloomberg.
For those keeping track
from all around the country. But some of the top names in political writing, Dan Balls from the Washington Post, Mark Leibovich from the New York Times was sitting in the same row as we were. So nobody got. And we were all watching on TV screen.
So I was worried that you weren't going to get a chance to see what I was seeing at the viewing party I was at last night, in that the graphics package that they had, honestly, it seemed like it was the beginning of an MMA fight or something like that.
Well,
I mean, they set this up to be this pugilistic, sort of thing, and it's like a showdown in Motown kind of thing. And it was really, I think, took away from what should have been a constructive debate. You hope it can, but I'm worried that debates are never going to be that way again.
I cut my cable some time ago, and I have not missed it for 1 minute, in large part because of stuff like this. I mean, you know, you want people, you want to have substantive discussions, you want to have you want to thrash things out, you want this civility they were always talking about. It's like everything about televised political debates works against that. It favors sound bites, it favors zingers, it favors this who won narrative, which is completely ridiculous. And as you point out, it can so easily be steered by whoever is putting the thing on. And so you're right. It was obviously supposed to be, you know, the moderates versus the progressives. And that was the narrative that was set up, and that was the narrative that came out of it. For the record, I think the progressives did pretty well. But that's just me.
Well, yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that because, I mean, there were some pretty good moments, I think, by Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders there. And I don't necessarily agree with Bernie Sanders on all the different things, but I thought he held his own. He was clearly under attack from the moment this thing started.
Yep.
And again, that was by design.
Yeah, right. I think so.
I thought he was very feisty. He was fierce, as was Elizabeth Warren. I mean, they were both saying, this is what I believe in. And I think, I mean, it was interesting what Pete
Buttigieg
had said. He said, look, let's do the right thing. Let's not worry about what the Republicans are going to label us. And I thought that was an interesting thing because I think, you know, the optics are like we have to beat Trump. And, you know, and we can't do that or people aren't going to elect us. You know, we're not going to win the White House, Trump. And so I think it's important. You know, it's interesting after 2004, I remember when after Kerry lost, one of my podmates at the Washington Post, we're not supposed to be biased, but we obviously had personal opinion, and he said, you know, it's time maybe the Democratic Party needs to be like maybe more pro-life and more that. And I said, well, what's the point of having two parties if you just want to win and just be like the other party because they're winning? And Howard Dean came in and took over, you know, the Democratic National Committee and really said, hey, we're the Democrats and this is what we stand for. And, you know, it worked.
Well, and I thought that was the point that Elizabeth Warren made last night pretty well. I mean, and one of the memorable lines from this debate last night, she's like, why would anybody bother to run for president, go through all the trouble to raise money and run for president if you're going to talk about what we can't do and things that we shouldn't be fighting for?
Got a big applause line, too.
Yeah, well, yeah. And it's interesting to see her do that because, you know, I think they were a little taken aback at the way that CNN approached this last night because they did. They set this up from the very beginning to be a fight. Mm-hmm. And not really a substantive policy discussion, but just to get people arguing.
Well, how can you have that much substance when you have 2 minutes to speak? I mean, you really can't
substantive.
That was part of the problem.
2 minutes. Yeah, I mean, in the way it's set up, I don't blame CNN. I mean, they want to have a lively, they want a debate. They don't want people all agreeing with each other. They want the differences to come out, and I think they were able to bring out those differences.
But the thing is, on something as complex as healthcare, if you're talking about trying to find a way to give people Medicare for all or something like that, that deserves a little bit of discussion. If Bernie's got some ideas on how we could actually pay for that, what would the tax increase look like for the middle class on this?
Right.
How would you balance that out with premium reductions if you're not on private insurance anymore? Those are things that people actually need to understand that require more than a 2 minute response because
you know
it's just
what the solution for this is, Craig.
I'm not sure what it is.
Well, we need to get rid of. I'm just reading from the Tuesday list here. We need to get rid of Steve Bullock. We need to get rid of John Delaney, John Hickenlooper on life support. Probably Amy Klobuchar out of here. Beto, sorry. Back to Texas with you. Tim Ryan and Marianne Williamson. And bring it down to Bernie, Elizabeth Warren. Pete Buttigieg, you know, just because he's a comer and he's raised a lot of money. And probably from tonight's list. I'm still thinking it was yesterday. Biden, a couple of others. I mean, we really need to winnow this field.
I think it will go down. But, you know, some of the people are using their personal wealth. And really, a lot of it gets down to the candidates who don't have that personal wealth, who realize that they're not getting any money, they're pulling terribly, and they're not getting
any money.
But we have what's his name? Yeah.
Steyer. Yeah,
and he's got personal wealth. I mean, he can go the distance if he wants. It's like if Bloomberg were in the race, he could go the distance. But some of these people don't have the money, they don't have the polling. And they will,
they need to get out.
You know, like I think we'll see probably at least half that list
by the time we get
gone
to September.
By September, I think.
I think they're going to Texas next.
Tonight,
if I'm not mistaken.
We've got, you know, Joe Biden's obviously going to be in there for quite a long time. Cory Booker will be there. Julian Castro possibly. Bill de Blasio. He actually performed well at the last debate, but I just don't think he has. Even in New York, I'm not sure he has the support for that.
Like Kamala Harris will hang.
Kamala Harris, and that's, I don't know, Andrew Yang's got money, so he may hang in there for a while.
This is the other thing that really irritates me. How many were in the running for the Republican nomination in 2016? Was it 12 or 16?
It's like 17 or something at one point.
So pretty close. So all the sneering that you're hearing from the Republicans about, this ridiculous field, it's like, you know, it goes back to what happened in 2016.
Right.
But, I mean, half of these people, or more than half of these people, are auditioning for either a cabinet position in the Democratic administration, should it happen, a book contract with their bold vision for America and a Photoshop picture of themselves on the cover, and well, I don't know what Marianne Williamson's looking for. Oh, a talking head spot on.
She's looking for enlightenment.
Yeah, right. She was actually that was. Can talk about her in a second.
Yeah.
But talking head spot on Fox or, you know, the designated liberal or whatever. And that's just the wrong place to do it. It's not good for the country. I mean, but this is, unfortunately, we have set up the system where these people become fame balls. And that's what it is.
I think it's an indicator that nobody is really, I mean, Joe Biden is out there in the polls, but, you know, he's vulnerable. And so I think. Yeah. As long as people see, it's like Tom Steyer is suddenly popped into the race. He wasn't there. He's popped into the race,
right?
Thinking, I got a shot. There's right. no look. Nobody expected Donald Trump to be the winner,
right.
Of that whole group. I mean, he was the most obnoxious in the group, attacking people, and people wondered, how are you going to do that? And even when he came out, he attacked John McCain and said, my heroes don't get caught.
We thought, scoundrel.
Oh my gosh, that is it. He attacked John McCain. It was like, then he took a shot at the Pope. Yeah. You're like, oh my gosh, the Pope. And it's like, I mean, he is the Teflon Don.
What he did is he tapped a deep well of poison in this country. And yeah. he's the gusher that keeps spewing it.
Now, this argument last night, though, was about whether or not a moderate is the only type of person that can beat him. We've got to win back those voters. Yeah, we lost to Trump last time around. I don't see it. I just think you need somebody with some articulated policy positions that's smart and tough and can take him on and call him
and
on his BS.
Somebody who can also articulate a vision for a better America.
Yes.
We want a better America. I ran across Facebook.
Make America Great Again?
No!
Make America better. Striving for improvement. That's what we should be doing, right?
Facebook sent up one of those, like, we thought you might want to remember this thing that happened 3 years ago, deals that it does from time to time. And it was a quote that I had clipped from the farewell address by Barack Obama at the 2016 Democratic Convention. I almost cried reading it because he was talking about like what a great country we are and how we keep moving forward and yes we stumble and yes we fight but every iteration of us is better, and I was just I was thinking about that American Carnage inauguration speech that Trump gave, and it's like people don't want that. They don't want to live in fear. They want to live with optimism. Let's give them some optimism.
Did we see any optimism last night?
I don't know. I think Elizabeth Warren brings across. I mean, she presents as an optimistic person. She's practical. She's down to earth. She's got a plan for that. But I think she's moving forward. She's not afraid of the future. Bernie, I think, is a little pedantic. You know, he kind of with his
I wrote the damn bill.
his crustiness and his arm gestures. I mean, he comes across a little bit as
he's fierce. Though,
but
know,
he is fierce.
See, I mean,
he's
he really
old
is.
Though. That's the
hey,
yeah,
look.
But you know, he comes across. He doesn't tire. I mean, look, that's a long time to stand on a stage.
It is.
2 hours
for
and
an old man.
We were tired. We were tired watching it, and it's almost 11 o'clock at night, and they were hanging in there, and he didn't show any like.
He didn't
form
flag
of exhaustion or anything. I mean, he was hanging in there.
No.
I thought Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
Buttigieg.
I thought he did well.
Buttigieg obviously needs to make some inroads in minority communities. He's struggling because again, when you're the mayor of a town, then you're blamed for every problem.
37.
But he showed up this morning.
Not a do or die thing.
I went and saw him over at Hart Plaza this morning. It was downtown early. He had a rally with the SEIU, so he clearly is trying to get in with labor, and get inserting himself in that fight right there. And he got a pretty good reception.
He is secretariat at. As a yearling, I think. You know, I mean, he's got enormous potential, but he's just, I think he just needs a little more seasoning. I mean, but he's,
does,
you know.
I think he belonged on the stage, though. I mean, I think
he absolutely did.
He's a smart guy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Steve Bullock, governor of Montana. I mean, there is something to be said for a Democrat that wins anything in Montana.
Yeah.
Although they did have Tester as a senator for, you know, he's been there. So Democrats can win there, but he acted as if, hey, I'm the only guy that's got the secret sauce to actually win over these people. And I'm not thinking the Democrats are going to win this national election by winning over Trump people. That's just not going
to
happen.
I mean, they're going to they have to present a a, like I just said, I mean, refer back, hit the 30 seconds back button a few more times and hear that last rant that I gave you. They need somebody who's optimistic, who's forward-looking, and who makes them believe that the country can be a better place, because right now it's a pretty awful place.
Well, we've got another one tonight. And again, as we mentioned, Joe Biden is going to be there, Cory Booker, and of course, Kamala Harris, who I'm actually interested to see, and she can build on that performance last time. She's been sort of sliding a little bit in some recent polls. But I think this is a good group. If this was narrowed down to 10 and they could all be there, all the serious people, because over two nights, are they going to ask the same questions? Are they going to be going through the same thing?
What's the narrative going to be tonight?
I don't know. So you're not getting all the different people on the same subjects.
Yeah.
And I think that's problematic. So we're not getting a really good idea of where these people are coming from.
Right. I think so, too. One of the basic rules of journalism is don't go into any situation with too many preconceived notions. I mean, yeah, there's background and there's, thank you, mister.
That's all right. This is a wonderful thing about podcasts. Okay. You can have this stuff in there and it's kind of funny. It's spice of life stuff.
It's fine. This is only semi-professional radio. Is that you need to be willing to be surprised by any story that you do. You know, that's why you ask questions. So I'm hoping that they don't have the CNN doesn't have a similar, like, you know, narrative that they're doing here.
Well, you know, I'm thinking back, and as I was going through reading all these articles in the paper this morning, trying to go back and recreate this thing in my mind that I watched last night. And the thing I hate about this format, too, is that some of the people will get maybe one or two sentences in total in this long debate. And, you know, so did John Hickenlooper say anything last night that you remember?
No.
I mean, you know, he was mixing it up, obviously, with he's more to the moderate side and things like that. But there's nothing that you came out of there and said, oh, I understand this guy now.
I mean, he's trying to be a moderate guy. Or he's trying to be the practical guy. He's trying to.
I ran a Western stage.
I'm not a dreamer like those people over there. I'm
practical.
I have a realistic
view of
how things are done. But he's just kind of, you know, he's there.
Yeah.
He seems like a decent guy and stuff like that. But I don't think a guy like that's going to get the traction. I think at this point, you know, the question will be who's the front runners, and then the question will be who is a potential VP candidate out of these people. And there are, you know, there are plenty of decent.
Sure.
I mean,
it's a deep bench
It is a very deep bench, and I think they can certainly find some good. VPs out of that as well.
Well, you know, I do want to get into this for a little bit. The Fox Theater looked great on television.
It really
did. It looked beautiful. A lot of people raving about it. The venue was a pretty good one. But Michigan itself and Detroit, really not a whole lot of mention of this state other than some comments about, you know, unions and jobs and contracts. But it was not very Michigan-centric. I didn't hear a whole lot that was speaking to the state Trump only won by 10,000 votes.
Right. I mean, they talked about Flint and they talked about... I mean, you know, Marianne Williamson used to live in Grosse Pointe and talked about that. But no, there was and there was some mention of labor and some other stuff. But for the most part, it was not a very there were not a lot of local focuses.
Particularly for the first hour, at least, or maybe even, you know, there was no mention almost that I can recall. And then slowly somebody thought like, oh, yeah, we're in Detroit. Yeah. I should probably say something about Detroit. And, you know, of the three states, the three important states that Trump won, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan. Michigan had the thinnest margin.
10,000 votes.
10,000 votes, which is not...
That doesn't bode well, I know,
yeah.
for him in 2020.
No.
This is going to be a super motivated election, electorate.
Right. Potentially.
You know, I had lunch yesterday with two friends who I used to work with. One of them was my first editor at the Washington Post, and now they're at Bloomberg, and they were telling me Bloomberg sent 10 people here for this for 2 days, and they said they're treating it like it's, you know, it's like pre-election night or something, or election night, and he says, but everyone is. And it had a feel last night like there was a certain excitement that you feel on election night, and I kind of felt some of that in the room there.
Well, and the people that came into town for this, very interesting, lots of characters out and about.
It was a great scene outside this.
It certainly was, and there's a great photo lineup at Deadline Detroit that you should check out that Michael Lucido and Alan, of course, participated in. You got a nice shot of Reverend Al, I noticed,
that was great.
Yesterday there.
He got special treatment, you know, they took him out of the line and let him go ahead of the line. And
of course.
He walked in kind of glowing.
This is Reverend Al Sharpton, not Reverend Al Green.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's true. I'd probably be pretty excited
Reverend
about
Al
Green,
but you're right. I mean, it was boisterous, but it wasn't ugly. I don't think.
No,
for the most part.
From what I heard, that somebody got detained yesterday, one person, and I'm not sure what it was related to, but that's what I was hearing this morning by some couple policemen talking.
Well, the Proud Boys were there, which is
the white supremacist guys were there
on the Trump side. On the Trump side, they were there. There were also, I didn't see any, I don't know. Were there, and then the awful little band singing
the
CNN
sucks.
Which is hilarious.
Like
it's
I said,
like,
they
looked like their parents had sent them.
Yeah.
dropped them off. Said, okay, I'll pick you up at 10 o'clock. Michael, does that work for you?
Michael came in and his, our audio engineer / videographer, photographer came in and he said something like, they had four guitars ported into one amp.
Yeah, that's terrible. I mean, just imagine the cacophony of crap that probably was. But, it is funny that all these people, some of these people were coming from all over the country to be a part of this debate.
Mm-hmm.
I ran into a woman yesterday. I posted a picture on Facebook of her wearing a dress with Hillary Clinton's face.
Oh, I saw that.
Massive.
Yes,
yeah,
I saw that. That was great.
And she was from Alabama, came all the way up here just for this. I mean, there was sort of a carnival atmosphere.
Yeah.
And then with CNN setting up that giant tent across the street for the last week, and all the other media people doing their live shots there, it's nice to be in the spotlight, kind of.
Yeah.
But I asked the question, is this what it feels like to be from Iowa or New Hampshire? Because they get
probably
to deal
so,
with this
you know?
All the time.
I interviewed a 77-year-old curmudgeon, Gays for Trump, called himself. Did you see Gays for Trump?
I did not engage him. He was talking to somebody else, so
yeah.
I didn't get a chance.
Okay, he was a real puzzle. You know, he's concerned about economic inequality, about homelessness, about gay rights, about all this other stuff, but he's absolutely 100% pro-Trump.
What do they call that? A enigma
wrapped
in a riddle?
I would call it cognitive dissonance. But I was like, so you care about all these things? And he's Jewish, too. That was the other thing. He's Jewish. And he's like, and he brought up the move of the embassy to Jerusalem. But I said, but what about calling these Tiki Torch guys who are saying Jews will not replace us? Very fine people. He's like, it doesn't mean anything.
I'm always skeptical. You know, it's funny when I'm Jewish and I talk to Jewish people and they'll be like, oh, my God, Trump is for the Jews. He gave, he gave the embassy, he moved the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And I go, well, so what? I said, he's pandering. I said, what does that do for Israel? Does that make Israel more secure? Did Israel need extra reassurance that, yes, U.S., we love you, Israel.
We love you, right, yeah.
And then they talk, if you talk to the ADL, they'll tell you how many, how anti-Semitism is on the rise everywhere in the world, including in
the
U.S.
Even with Ivanka being so pretty and Jewish? Oh, my gosh.
Well,
that's just about peeling off some of those high-end donors. Yeah. That's it, getting away from the Democratic
Sam
Party,
Adelson,
which is, that started,
right,
in the Reagan era.
Aside from that, what is...
Adelson,
Exactly, Sheldon Adelson.
Sheldon Adelson.
That's what it's about, and he and like-minded people who basically donate based on that kind of policy.
Yeah.
He panders. He knows how to pander, and he panders well.
He's
a pander bear.
But I feel like, to be honest,
pander bear.
I think to be... really helpful to Israel, I think you have to be have genuine belief in be a fair, have bipartisanship while you're trying to negotiate peace. I mean, right now, it's hard to start peace when Hamas says, Israel, we don't recognize your existence. But there's a starting point at some point where people get tired, and the leadership may hold on to that. Hamas and
you would think a guy who ran on the fact that he was such a great deal maker might know this,
right? Yeah, he should be able to,
Weird.
In a minute. He was the one who was, it's funny, he was the one who was talking about Chicago. when he was campaigning, he's going to go in there and take care of all the shootings and stuff like
he
that.
He wouldn't dare now, set foot in Chicago. Yeah, they would eat his breakfast.
Well, now he just sees those all as rat-infested cities, right, communities that he has. That he's not even the president of. It's not part
yeah,
of his
exactly.
Country.
That's exactly. Well, you know, I'm surprised that that episode and that issue didn't get more attention last night.
The Baltimore thing?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I well, thought that that might be something they could call it. I'm hoping it does. I mean, I think it's worthy of discussion to point out that this is not normal
behavior. A friend of mine
said
that he's expecting an anti-Detroit Trump tweet storm coming pretty soon, or at least some, shall we say, spit talking from various surrogates.
I don't know, man. He needs Michigan. He needs Michigan. And he does not need Detroiters showing up at the polls this time like they did not do.
Yeah.
You know, back in 2016.
He does need Michigan, but I also think that it's going to be very hard for them to resist taking at least some conservatives to take a shot at Detroit. Go ahead.
I mean, it's interesting. I think, if he attacked Detroit, Detroiters, I mean, Baltimoreans or whatever they're called, I mean, they're right down the road. They're 45 minutes away.
Right.
I mean, if Detroit was 45 minutes away and he did that, there would be 10,000 people from the Detroit area in front of the White House raising hell. And I think Detroiters would not react in the same way that the folks from Baltimore would. I think they would be much harsher.
Well, yeah. Okay, so here's what he...
We have a deeper-rooted insecurity that we will go after your ass.
Well, here we go. We'll end with this. This is Donald Trump's tweet today about last night's event. CNN's Don Lemon, the dumbest man on television, insinuated last night while asking a debate question, that's in quotation marks, that I was a racist, when in fact I am, again in quotations, the least racist person in the world, as if that's a title.
He put that in quotes. No. Exactly. That's how old newspapers speak. Yes. That means, like, not really.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
It's like you say, perhaps nobody likes women's, nobody fights for women's rights like me during the campaign. Well, I'm for women more than anyone.
But he said, perhaps someone should explain to Don that he is supposed to be neutral, unbiased, and fair, or is he too dumb, then in parentheses, stupid, to understand that? No wonder CNN's ratings and MSNBC's also have gone down the tubes and will stay there until they bring credibility back to the newsroom. Don't hold your breath.
Wow.
So there you go. Don Lemon.
The Don has spoken.
Well, I mean, look.
Don on Don violence.
That's right. That's exactly right. Don Lemon is the guy that asked the question when the Malaysian Airlines plane was missing over the Indian Ocean. Can we rule out the supernatural?
He's the one who said, could it have been sucked into a black hole?
Yeah.
Bermuda Triangle.
Are we sure we can rule out the supernatural at this point? And that's when I realized that 24 hours of news is more than anybody needs.
It really is, yeah.
All right, well, we're going to wrap it up there. Another one tonight, and we'll check in tomorrow and see if we learned anything new. I appreciate your guys' help on this. Thank you very much. Nancy Derringer, Alan Lengel from Deadline Detroit. I'm Craig Folly. Thanks for listening to the show today, and we'll do this again tomorrow. Send me your emails, thecraigfollyshow@gmail.com. Send me messages on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Snapchat.
He's connected.
I'm not connected. I don't like it, but I have to be. Everybody has to be these days.
He's networked.
But I do appreciate you guys reaching out. And we'll talk again tomorrow. See you at one of those parties tonight. There's a bunch of watch parties around town. So if you're into politics, who knows? There's a bunch of good ones out there. So we'll find them.
I'll find them. Okay. Bye.
The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit is made possible in part by Mad Dog Professional Services. Mad Dog Professional Services focuses on putting their clients on the leading edge of technology, faster than thought possible, to capture new revenue streams. That's Mad Dog Professional Services.